I don't know how this is going to turn out, Limits. I don't know how it's going to turn out.
I can hear it.
I feel fine.
Really?
But the voice is coming and going.
You know, the crazy thing about that is I experienced the same thing last year.
And so weird.
The worst part about it was I lost my voice the day before I was supposed to do the opening football game for the PAC last year. And I was like, oh my gosh. And my new broadcast partner was brand new, had never done a game, former player, and I was ushering him through everything on the week, and I could feel it coming on the week of, and I was so worried, and I got so much rest and did everything I can to be ready. And it was gone the morning of, and I was,
I was so heartbroken.
Depressed.
I know.
It's so tough. And I was worried about the same thing this year. So I just kept getting so much sleep last week and making sure it didn't happen again. And
well, lucky you didn't catch what I had, which is what my daughter had.
Yeah.
You're lucky. So I apologize for that in advance. I know that can be annoying sometimes to listen to. I'm going to be chewing on candy and drinking hot orange drink. Reminds me of Tang.
Tang.
Do you even know what Tang is?
No.
It's a drink from my childhood that was very special to me. So maybe that'll help. My understanding.
It's a good sip right there.
Is that Donnie Football will be warming up in the bullpen.
Okay.
In case this doesn't work out. And, we'll bring him in. Hopefully he'll do better than Bednar if he does get called into the game. Right? What a disaster.
I got your back.
What an epic disaster. But I'm going to fight through. Darn it. I'm going to fight through and see if I can pitch a complete game on this. So why don't we open with a little six-pack Limitless Wonder? Then what a man you've become. Thank you. Off the top, presented by JP Roofing and Siding. We got a lot happening today. We have John Parato on the show, Jeff Hathorne. But let's start with the Stillers, why don't we?
Stillers.
And this offensive line. Dan Moore with a swollen ankle. So we have Fatanu and on the right side. Broderick Jones on the left side. And I'm sorry, but that just feels natural. That feels like the way it should be. Let's start growing with this offensive line. The Steelers aren't going to win the Super Bowl this year. I don't think. Although, if the defense were ever to stay healthy, I'd give them a shot in a playoff game or two. But it's time to let this line just grow up together. Do you agree? And this is the perfect excuse. I don't know. I guess Dan Moore played okay the other day.
He did.
I don't know.
You can admit that. He did. He played well.
But I'm ready to see this, and I'm ready to see it now. You?
Yeah, because the sample size that we've seen from Dan Moore is so large now. I mean, we're talking about a three-year sample, another game in year four, where he's just not – they drafted two guys in the first round to replace him for a reason, where they see it internally that – their eyes on the future are towards Broderick Jones and Troy Faltanu. And Troy Faltanu saying how confident and comfortable he is on the right side of the line should give them every indication that, and he's fully healthy now, you put him at right, Broderick Jones' natural position, back at left where he's most comfortable, feels pretty good, and can be the main guy to block for whatever quarterback you have. Rip the Band-Aid off with Zach Frazier in the middle, play the kids, let them go out there and learn and grow and have some camaraderie together, because especially this early portion of the season, before you get to the Baltimores of the world, the Philadelphias of the world, and the Kansas Cities of the world, you don't want to have to usher somebody in there later, whether it be injury or maybe, Chuk said something bad.
Yeah, if he fails, they can throw Dan Moore back in there.
They could.
However, I'm not sure that's the way it's going to play out. I think if Dan Moore is cleared, he'll probably be playing. And that brings us to six-pack item number two. Is the quarterback situation. And the more reviews that I see on the Justin Fields game the other day, I'm starting to think it was a replica of Ben throwing for 600 yards and six touchdowns in that game against the Colts. I mean, every time I turn around, yesterday I saw he set some kind of, weird, anonymous, Antonio Brown type six catch for 50-yard record. Did you see that?
No, I did not.
It came from our friend and yours, Ryan Scarpino. And let me see here. It's just, it's one of these archaic things that nobody would really know if they didn't tell you. Now, Pro Football Focus, they had him having a great game. They had Fields as having one of the best games of any quarterback in the league in throwing the ball. Listen to this from Ryan Scarpino, who used to work in Steelers PR. Justin Fields is the first Steelers quarterback to have a completion percentage of 70+, minimum 20 attempts, passer rating of plus 90, and 50+ rushing yards in a single game. Does that impress you, or do you say those are random benchmarks?
It's definitely a random stat that somebody's creating to make it look like Justin Fields' performance was better than it was, but it does indicate good numbers. I mean, this isn't PFF signaling pressure rates with Myles Garrett and coming up with other things that we've never heard of in 100 years of football.
What's wrong with a pressure rate, Donnie?
Pressure rates are fine, but you know, a lot of the numbers and statistical metrics that everybody was trying to use to qualify Myles Garrett to be the unsung winner of the Defensive Player of the Year award were things that are not as important as sacks and QB hits and everything like that. So all that aside, I think Justin Fields performed pretty well, and those numbers back it up. I think what people noticed, though, is that they didn't utilize the middle of the field, and it didn't seem like they wanted to really roll them out and use them too much in the first half.
Not only did they not use the middle of the field, I see a chart put out here by Warren Sharp from Sharp Football. It has a gigantic square that covers almost the entire field, just leaving a little room on each sideline, and you have a dot for all the completions in the middle of that square. Guess how many are in the middle?
None.
None.
You could drive a dump truck through that nitroglycerin plant right there, and it wouldn't be in the middle of the field.
It's unbelievable. Is that a product of the offense? Is it a product of him not looking there? I don't know. If Arthur Smith was so great with tight ends, a tight end genius, then why is Kyle Pitts a renowned underachiever so far in his career? Anybody ever ask that little question? Next. That sounded good, didn't it?
Very juicy.
I mean, my voice is okay.
Yeah.
Is it getting better, in your opinion?
About the same.
What I can't do is go to the high notes. Like when I take my dog for a walk, I usually go to the high note and say, come on, bud.
Oh,
yeah, I did it. It worked. Come on, bud.
Might not be too much singing today.
Treat, treat. That's what I say to him, and then he comes down for the treat. It is getting better because I couldn't do that earlier in the day. Did you just crack a third one?
I'll crack another.
Please. Yeah, double feature.
Double fisting.
This Pirates winning streak, do you find it meaningful? Do you find it interesting? Or do you find it to be completely useless considering the fact it's September silly season when you can't believe anything you see?
Well, this isn't the best radio answer, but I think it shows that the next 3 weeks are going to be very important against the teams that they're playing. And what I mean by that is they have Kansas City next, then they have the Cardinals, then they have the Reds, first place Milwaukee, then the Yankees.
What's it mean? So why is this important? Do you think Bob Nutting is sitting there saying, If we finish with a certain, maybe he has a win number in mind, and if they get there, Shelty's back, and if they don't, he isn't.
I think so.
And if he does, isn't that ludicrous?
Yes. It's 1,000% ridiculous, because Derek Shelton should not be judged, and Ben Sherrington should not be judged, and Andy Haynes should not be judged off the last 20 games of the season when a lot of teams are either out of it, like Miami and Washington, the Reds, and compared to the Yankees, Cardinals, whatever. It should be the 5 years that have led up to this. It should be the 8 months that have led up to this. And the failure of a season.
I disagree. It shouldn't be the 5 years.
Okay, I'll give you the 3 years, because the first two with COVID and everything, they were tanking pretty much.
The first three they were tanking, in my opinion. I didn't even start to judge Shelty until the beginning of last season. And the fact of the matter is, since he signed that extension at 15-7 last year, he's like 20, 25 games under 500.
Yeah.
To me, that's the fair period of time to judge him. And I agree with you. I mean, these games mean nothing. They're cosmetic. their talking points. Yeah, if they reeled off, if they won 80 games, then that would be, you know, the soundbite, the nugget that everybody would use. Oh, we went from 76 to 80. You know, we're right there. Well, let's look at some of the lineups that they're throwing out here. The one yesterday had Connor Joe in it. That's actually all. That's all I need to say. Let's move on. The one yesterday had Connor Joe in it. So you're going to tell me that we're judging the rest of this season like it matters with the Pirates for anybody's future?
Does this number, stats and facts that matter, do anything for you? Shelton has managed 692 games. He has a .415 winning percentage. Only one manager in franchise history that has managed that many of number of games has a worst winning percentage.
Not many in baseball history
Correct.
That have managed that many games. I mean, of course, it does, although, again, I give him the first 3 years. But the fact of the matter is that coaches, managers that are brought into these kinds of situations in sports rarely survive the tanking for very long. It's just tough to last.
Yeah.
When you're losing at that kind of clip. And really, the only coach manager that I found in sports history, and I didn't do an exhaustive search, but I did a pretty good one, who survived this kind of losing for this many years and lived to tell about it was Clint Hurdle in Colorado. He had like 6 or 7 losing seasons.
He went to a World Series
to start his career there, and then they had that magical late season run, whenever it was, 06, 07, I don't remember. And he won that year. So could next year be a Clint Hurdle year for Derek Shelton? I don't know, man. I do know he sounded very jovial the other day, and then I couldn't help but notice that the next day Ben Cherington said, yeah, I expect him back. Do you think they've been given assurances that they'll both be back yet?
No, I don't. I don't think they have.
I wonder.
And if they have, how truthful are they? Because I think back to Clint Hurdle, Joe, he publicly said in a story that came out about 5-6 days before the end of the season, yes, I'll be back. I'm expected to be back. Looking forward to next year. Basically previewing next season, and he's gone a week later. So these things are very fluid. They move. They change. And that's why I think that anything that we think now, something significant could happen in the future. Was it different than the 2019 season with Hurdle and Keone Kella fighting in the clubhouse and losing the locker room and everything? Maybe it's a different situation. But it's still fluid over the next 3 weeks where anything can really happen.
Next. How about little Bailey Falter?
Oh.
How about him? He has a .219 ERA in September. Well, I was going to repeat what I thought were going to be really good ERAs every month. Unfortunately, it was 6.53 in August, 4.91 in July, and 5.63 in June. So I guess my question then is, and he was really good at the beginning of the year. We know that for 2 months. Sometimes we can get fooled by these things. Congratulations to him on a great game, by the way, last night. But almost a no-hitter. In fact, I tuned in to the PM guys. They were about to go to it live.
And guess what happened?
He got a hit. Somebody got a hit.
It was the pony jinx, according to Mueller.
Man, that thing spreads across many mediums, many sports, doesn't it?
Like wildfire.
I'm still a little torn on Bailey Falter.
Poor Bailey.
I'm still a little torn on him for next year's rotation. I don't want to make it seem like this guy is Steve Carlton, but he's been respectable and at times very good, and he's still relatively young at 27, so I'm certainly open to that idea. I mean, it's going to be Keller, Skeens, Jones for sure, unless there's a trade in the offseason. You know, I'm thinking Keller. And then, I don't know, is Bubba Chandler going to start with the big club?
I doubt it.
Is Oviedo coming back? Strong. Luis Ortiz has acquitted himself. He's kind of like the right-handed Bailey Falter this year.
Do you think Ortiz, though, would be better suited as a high-leverage reliever, as a seventh, eighth, or ninth inning guy? Because I kind of think he would, with the amount of starting pitching depth that they have, to utilize his arm, 96, 97, and the stuff that he has late innings with the problems that they've had this year. That's where I'd pivot Luis Ortiz.
That's an interesting thought. It really is. He's been very good as a starter. No, I won't say very good. He's been pretty good
as a
starter.
He's had good moments.
Yeah. He's been pretty good as a starter. But that's an interesting thought. And that leads me to our next topic. What do you do with David Bednar? Just roll him out? Like, here's my fear with him and Hayes. And it was a little bit alarming to me when Shelton told us yesterday that, oh, yeah, he's strengthening his back. Oh, that'll do it. Because we haven't tried that over the last 2.5 years. And that surgery is completely off the table. And as we know, I'm not a doctor. I just play one on the radio. I don't know what the problem is. But it seems to me that a simple strength and conditioning program or a strength program, that's going to work. I'm guessing they've tried that before. So here's my fear with Hayes and Bednar, that they're just going to show up at camp, spring training, and roll it back like nothing's ever happened. You know what I mean?
I do.
Is that the best thing to do? Should Bednar just roll into camp as the closer, the unquestioned closer?
I don't think that you should forget going into spring training about everything that happened this year with David Bednar and write it off as a one-off. One, because it happened. But two, it's the fastball command has just not been there. And he's getting beat on a high fastball, and that's his signature pitch. He's not commanding the zone very well. It has just not been good. And whether it's a lack of confidence now, whether it's something that is not resonated with whatever Oscar Marine's trying to tell him, you go into next year with Bednar in pencil, not in pen, as the closer. And someone could supplant him.
Who?
If they pitch significantly
someone
better.
Someone internally?
That's the problem.
I would have thought Holderman, up until the infamous August meltdown, that he was a closer in waiting. Now I don't think that.
I still think he could be a high leverage reliever for them.
Santana, Majinski, is anybody else a closer in waiting?
Santana's been the closer the last couple of appearances that Bednar has not been the guy. So maybe that's one avenue that they go.
If Bednar were simply his normal self, I think this team might be 74-72.
Yeah, I can agree with that.
Like, he didn't have to be, you know, Mariano Rivera, just his normal self.
I'd say Bednar, Sawinski.
Even a little worse than his normal self. And I think that's a 4-game swing. And then you add in the Holderman disaster. Just a disaster during that August streak. And, you know, if you're making an argument for Shelty, and I know he misused Holderman once or twice in there. But maybe the best argument to play devil's advocate for Shelty is, was it his fault that his bullpen blew up? What's he supposed to do, not use all-star relievers or all-star caliber relievers? And if they hadn't blown up, the Pirates might be sitting here on their way to a winning record. Limits. He's on the phone.
Yes.
Sounds like a very important call, which I would hope it would be in the middle of a show that we're doing together.
It was. Maybe we could have brought a caller on, but he made a point that I don't think was very good.
What did he
about
say?
David Bednar.
Now I'm curious.
He said David Bednar needs to go on a diet and that'll fix all his problems. It's like, come on, man.
Well, my point was, if they were 74-72, well, they'd still be in not great shape.
Yeah, they wouldn't be in a playoff position, but I mean...
No, but they wouldn't be totally out of it. But the fact is that there were teams that took off here. This looked like a year where you could get in slightly above 500, but the Diamondbacks, Padres, and Mets just absolutely caught fire is what they did.
We could play the what-if game with a bunch of different guys. Bednar, Sawinski, Colin Holderman.
No. Yeah, but it's
Henry Davis.
It's way different with all those guys but Bednar.
Correct, because he's a two-time All-Star.
Right. You go in penciling him in for that's what we're counting on. The other guys hadn't done anything yet. I mean, Sawinski, you're right. You expected maybe, 20 to 25 homers, or maybe he would take a step forward. Davis, you were praying, but Bednar was guaranteed.
Texter makes a good point.
Yeah.
Bednar had a bad year. Remember what that one year Chris Boswell had a really bad season but came back and is still one of the best kickers in the game?
Yeah, that's not a bad point at all. It's a wonderful point, as a matter of fact. But you better hope that it's not something that they've caught up to him on. Maybe it was injury. He was definitely injured coming into the season.
Yes.
And then
I know Shelton said otherwise with us.
No, he didn't. He was injured coming into the
season. Shelton said that he was healthy coming into the season.
When was that?
Either this week or last week on the show.
Well, it was a fact that
it
was a fact that he was injured in spring training, right?
He was injured in spring training, yes.
So you can't help but wonder. You're right, Shelty did say that. I see it right here. That he wasn't injured coming into the season. However, he was coming off an injury that hampered his ability to ready himself for the season. That's just as important to me. Or it's important nonetheless, I should say. Or it's important otherwise.
I have one more for you.
Yes.
Welcome back to the Pac-12, baby. The Pac-12 making significant moves. Did you hear about this?
What happened?
They are no longer the Pac-2. The Pac-12 has been divided in half and is now the Pac-6. Four teams from the Mountain West are officially joining the Pac-12. Boise State, Colorado State, Fresno State, San Diego State. If you're a state, come on down. You're in the Pac-12.
Man, watching the demise of the Pac-12 was very hard for me. It really was. That was a great, legendary conference that produced, you know, we could go on for the rest of the show with who it produced. Everyone from Jackie Robinson, Kareem, Bill Walton, Marcus Allen. Would you care to chime in? Anybody, Tiger Woods. I mean, all kinds of people came from the Pac-12, and then just to see it go away was very sad. But your point is well taken, City Limits, and thank you for adding it. Can we do one more?
Yes, we quite well can.
Look at this. See what arrived in the mail yesterday?
Ah, I like it.
My Indiana Fever pullover. I'll show it to the people. Yes, I will.
Does it say Caitlin Clark on the back?
No, it's just general.
It should.
Here it is. Indiana Fever, baby. Now, they lost last night, which really disappointed me. But you know how some people become huge, like soccer fans?
Yeah.
That's me with the Fever. I'm a WNBA fan now. I want a team in Pittsburgh. Do you?
I'd rather have an NBA team in Pittsburgh, but I feel like...
That's unrealistic and it's not happening.
I disagree that it's unrealistic. But the WNBA's popularity is growing, so that could help if Pittsburgh had a WNBA team.
I think it'd be unbelievable. I do. You definitely sell out when Caitlin Clark came to town, and if you had a decent team, people would go, I think. All right, Limits. Thank you so much for all that. You were wonderful in that segment.
You're quite welcome. I'm here to assist.
Fan Twitter brought to you by South Hills Kia Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. Hotline presented by Sullivan Super Service, providing trusted plumbing and HVAC service for over 50 years. And the text line brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, a personal injury law firm where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. What we didn't get into there was the backyard brawl. And while the stakes aren't as high as, say, 2007, when West Virginia was about to play in the national championship game if they won. Limits, could you crack a can on me, please? Thank you. Very kindly, as we continue our 12-pack here, let's move on to Shohei Ohtani. I mean, this is remarkable stuff. What's this guy going to do next? I'll tell you what he's going to do next. Become the first 50-50 guy in the history of baseball. Last night, Ohtani gets his 47th homer and his 48th stolen base. I mean, he's going to smash this.
He's going to beat it by far. He might beat it by Monday.
What he's doing, I was just looking up, guys. Willie Blanking Mays never stole more than 40 bases in a season. Ohtani has 48. Who else comes to mind as the greatest all-around players ever?
Ricky Henderson comes to mind for me.
Ricky Henderson's high for home runs, never got to 30.
Mike Trout.
Mike Trout's a good one. Mike Trout, we can definitely look up. His 1 year he had 49 stolen bases, but only 30 homers. Mike Trout has never hit as many home runs as Ohtani has now.
I don't think Trout's ever hit 48 or whatever.
People laughed a couple of years ago when I said he's the greatest baseball player who ever lived. Now, of course, career resume is what people become obsessed with. I didn't say he had the best career resume. I didn't. I said if you plucked any baseball player out of his prime that Ohtani, this was 2 years ago, is the best because he's the only one who's pitching and hitting on this level. Babe Ruth did that for a very short period of time and didn't have both going to the level that Ohtani did. So to me, it becomes a non-starter that he's the greatest baseball player who ever lived. Now he can't pitch. What does he do? Becomes the first 50-50 guy who ever walked the planet. I mean, this is legendary stuff.
Is he your undisputed National League MVP this year?
Yeah, I don't even have to see who else is up. Who else is up?
Ketel Marte's had a very good year.
Now, get out of here with Ketel Marte. Not you, City Limits. I didn't mean that to sound
harsh. Just throwing out options.
I know.
Ohtani this year, 292, 992 OPS, 47 bombs, 104 RBIs, 65 walks compared to 146 strikeouts in the 48 stolen bases. He's also hit 30 doubles and 7 triples.
That's unbelievable. You know, Marte's having a good year. It's Ohtani, 50-50, first guy in history. Nobody, I don't care who else is up for the award. And if he was in the American League, he would be the MVP over Aaron Judge if he was doing this, like he should have been 2 years ago. Ridiculous. It's almost like we took it for granted that he was also leading the majors in strikeout rate.
Of course we did.
As a pitcher.
We never seen anything ever like it.
And I think that fact almost prevented him from winning his rightful MVP award. Anyway, I'm tuning in to watch this stuff, man.
Yeah, me too. Because he is such a phenomenon that we haven't seen in 100 years. I don't think people knew how to judge him because we've never seen anything like it. And people don't know how to truly appreciate it because we don't know what to compare it to other than Babe Ruth, who nobody was alive to see.
Is he the greatest athlete on earth right now? Four major sports, he's the greatest,
right? That's tough. He's definitely in the top five. But it's so hard to compare baseball players to football players and hockey players to basketball players.
Not really. Who's the greatest athlete in all of sports? I'm not saying who would win a competition between the two, but who's at the highest point in his sport right now? If it was just baseball, it would be Ohtani and probably Old Heller.
Is he a better athlete than LeBron? That I don't think so.
Right now? What do you mean? Like if they had an Olympic-style competition? Who's at the higher level in their game? It's not close.
Yeah, you're talking about LeBron, I guess, a couple years ago.
Yeah. Anyone else? Football?
Tyreek Hill, Mahomes.
Mahomes.
You think Tyreek Hill's a better athlete than Mahomes?
I mean, I guess, but what are we talking about? They're going to run and then play ping pong or something? Who's at the higher level?
That's the problem. You're comparing a lot of apples and oranges.
No, I'm not. I'm saying who's at the highest level of their sport.
Well, okay, highest level of their sport?
Yes.
Then I'd say Ohtani and Patrick Mahomes, and I'd say Mahomes because he's winning championships.
I'd say Ohtani because of what he's doing individually. Next. I'm scared, City Limits. What if I lose my voice?
It's been going pretty well so far.
No, it hasn't. I also find myself highly irritable today, and I apologize for that. Very disagreeable.
That's okay. You have reasons, not excuses.
What time does the Pirate game start tonight?
It doesn't.
Yes, it does.
There is no game.
Yes, there is.
No, there isn't.
I'm going to disagree with every single thing you say
today.
That's
fine. We'll have a great argument and discussion.
What time does their game start tomorrow?
6:40.
No, it doesn't. Let's go to...
It's probably 6:41.
Let's go. give me another one, will you? I forgot what I was going to say. Oh, here's what I was going to say. Steelers getting ready for Sean Payton, who is a loathsome character in my not-so-humble opinion. I don't like him at all, and I actively root for him to fail. What he did to Nate Hackett last year, you remember that, where he had to issue the apology, was sort of forced to do that, and what he did to Russell Wilson. Not playing him or not playing him. It's humiliating him on the sidelines for a Hall of Fame quarterback and then the way the Broncos treated him in general. And just Sean Payton. So I was thinking, since Belichick is no longer in the NFL, who is the most hateable, loathsome NFL coach right now, in your humble opinion? Who would it be? I think we're at a point where we probably have less of them than we've had in a long, long time, only because Belichick was the king.
And Pete Carroll wasn't very well liked, I don't think, either by a lot of fans.
So who is? You can't not like Andy Reid, right? He just eats chicken wings and...
I guess.
You know, does commercials with Mahomes.
Like, I want to say Jim Harbaugh or John Harbaugh, but yeah. I don't really have anything against John Harbaugh. He's just a good coach.
Harbaugh, over the years, I feel like has lessened as an unlikable character.
Jim Harbaugh or John?
John. Did I say Jim?
I said Jim, and that's why I was confused.
Jim
so
is
John
and Jim, Jim remains.
I think Jim Harbaugh is probably one of the most
very
hated,
unlikable.
Even though he's back. Yeah,
very unlikable.
He's unlikable with all the stuff with Michigan. At least I'm sure that carries over to some NFL people.
Anybody in the AFC East? No, they're all.
Do you like Robert Saleh?
No, I don't. Sean
McDermott.
I don't care about him. That's part of the point.
Mike McDaniel.
Anybody in this? I mean, Stefanski seems like a nice man.
Yeah, he's fine. Zach Taylor, whatever.
Wonderful man. And like I said, John Harbaugh, I think, has come around to being likable. He's been around for so long. You don't know what the division would look like without him.
Like Tennessee.
I like John Harbaugh.
Tennessee, Callahan, fine. The Colts, Shane Steichen, I like him.
Nobody, yeah, they're all practically anonymous. They're nameless gray faces.
D'Amico Ryans is fine. Like,
yeah, they're
really
all
have
good.
Any problem with them. They're all new coaches.
They're all good. But, and then out west, you have two in the same division.
Yep.
Sean Payton and Jim Harbaugh. Anybody in the NFC East? Sirianni. I don't even know who the coach of the Commanders is. Cowboys.
Yeah,
everybody likes Mike McCarthy. He's a jolly fellow.
Do they?
Not in Dallas, but you know what I mean. He's not an unlikable guy.
And Brian Daboll, very unlikable in New York.
Yeah, but nobody cares about Brian Daboll. Dan Campbell is universally beloved. I think they probably even like him in Chicago and Detroit, for God's sake.
That's why we picked him to win the Super Bowl.
Green Bay, Guy LaFleur, he's just a quiet little mouse, isn't he? He's just a little mouse. He makes game plans in a little cubbyhole, right?
I like Guy LaFleur.
In the living room. I like him, too. He's a nice little man. Who else? Nobody in the NFC
Kevin
South.
Kevin O'Connell.
Nobody even knows who's in the NFC South. Kyle Shanahan have a little cockiness to him? Is he unlikable?
A little bit. I don't think he's unlikable, though.
But he's not unlikable.
He just game plans around you and dominates.
Unlikable is you look at the guy and become angry. That was Belichick. That could be Jim Harbaugh. And for me, that's Sean Payton. That's not Kyle Shanahan. What about McVay? You know, he seems very
seems cool.
Smart, nice.
Seems like a nerd.
They might be jealous because he's almost too perfect. You know what I mean?
Right.
But he's not the type where you look at that television set and swear words come out of your mouth.
Now, the only thing...
You root desperately for that guy to lose. You want him to lose. At the end of a Super Bowl once, my wife and I, it was the undefeated Patriots when they lost. We went crazy yelling at Belichick on the TV. Take that, you blank, blank. You know what? That type of thing.
Right.
Is there anybody like that left? I don't think so.
Sean Payton would probably be the top.
Payton and Jim Harbaugh. That's it.
Yeah, because, I mean, Mike McDonald in Seattle, he's like brand new. There's a lot of new coaches, and that's kind of part of the problem. A lot of guys that stick around for a while and have big dynasties and are unlikable or partly for that reason, but Andy Reid is just jolly old
wonder.
Andy Reid in his red suit.
He plays Santa Claus in the Christmas play, right? Nobody hates him.
I mean, who's the Cardinals coach?
Everybody likes him. Nobody cares who's the Cardinals coach. What about even in college football, which used to be rife with these characters?
Oh, Jim Harbaugh was number one on my list.
Well, who else?
Saban. I did not like
right.
Saban.
And now that's my point. He's gone too.
I think Dabo Sweeney has some qualities. The fact that Clemson, I mean, this is so stupid.
Hold on.
This is dumb.
Hold the phone. There's a guy.
I give you the floor.
There's a guy. You may have him pounding a table after his team's most recent season opening loss.
Yes.
And I would include the NFL and Sean Payton and college, maybe all time for me. This man I do not like. Do you have him?
You want to say it at the same time? 3, 2, 1, Brian Kelly.
Yes.
Okay, thanks for saying it with me.
You're welcome. I didn't know what you wanted us to say.
Say it. We said it on 3, 2, 1. We're going to say the same name.
Do you have the clip of him pounding the table? Do you have the clip of him trying to act like he's from the Deep South when he first got hired at LSU? That's a classic, isn't it? Very unlikable.
And we're sitting here again. We're sitting here again talking about the same things.
I watched that clip 100 times because I gleaned so much enjoyment out of it. And here's the other thing I would say. is it's a good thing to have hateable coaches. It's a good thing for sports. You want to beat them so badly. I don't give a crap if a team I'm rooting for beats whoever's coaching the Cincinnati Bearcats. Who was that man last week? Who was their coach again?
That's the point.
That's the point. I don't care. Well, it's Steelers-Browns, but do I want Kevin Stefanski to suffer? Not really.
Do you remember?
He seems like a wonderful man with a nice beard. I don't care about him.
Well, here's the point. You remember last year when Thursday Night Football, Amazon were doing their promos for the Steelers and the Patriots game that they were doing on Thursday night?
Yeah.
They had TJ Watt as the representative on the Steelers side. It was Bill Belichick on the Patriots side on the graphic. I mean, that tells you everything you need to know. He was the most notable person in the organization.
Maybe this relates to the backyard brawl. But rivalries and animosity are what makes sports. It's what makes sports. When you're in your neighborhood as a kid or in high school or little league, what fun is it to go up against some anonymous or even bad team and beat them? Who cares? You live to go against, you know, back in the old days, it was the kids from Main Street or thereabouts against the kids from Eggert Road. I still remember every bit of those games. I don't remember the games against the kids from Harlem Road. They were no good. You give me Eggert Road, I can name them all. We had a soccer game. I played goalie. It's a 1-1 tie. We never decided it. And I'm still bitter to this day that we didn't just keep going in overtime or whatever. I forget the reason. Maybe we had to be home for dinner. I don't know, but it was a 1-1 tie. We live in sports for our rivals to beat them. Used to have that argument with Ron. He would say something like, you know, from the pit side, I think fans just want to win. They don't care who you play. And I would say, okay, so let's take that to its extreme. Do you think that Pitt fans or Penn State fans would rather play Youngstown State every week and go 11-0? Or would they rather have the experience of enjoying the buildup to games like Penn State, Ohio State, or Pitt, West Virginia, or Pitt, Notre Dame, and live that life during the year, even if you're risking a loss or two? Of course you would. Of course you would.
I agree. What about the other name that pops into my head? Like,
where
first
were we?
With Brian Kelly.
Oh, yeah. Can you play that again before we move on? I love it so.
And we're sitting here again. We're sitting here again talking about the same things.
Play it again. I want to hear him slam his fist.
And we're sitting here again. We're sitting here again talking about the same things.
I want the rest
again.
Of the show.
We're sitting here again.
Keep
sitting here again.
Yes,
sitting here
that,
again.
That.
Sitting here again. Sitting here again. Sitting here again. Sitting here again. Talking about the same things.
Well done. Very well done. So if you know, PJ Fleck is sitting there banging his fist against the table, I don't even look up from the couch if it's on a SportsCenter highlight. Dabo Swinney, unlikable. Lane Kiffin, do you find him unlikable?
I kind of find him unlikable, but then again, he beat Penn State last year in the Peach Bowl in a game that I drove 12 hours to go to.
And here's a guy
that
you either really like or really don't.
Yeah, because then he rubs it in your face.
No, that's Dion.
That's who I was getting to.
And I've gone back and forth
on him. I don't like Dion.
There's no medium opinion on Dion.
No, I'm so over Dion. I liked the charade in the show that was so fascinating with Colorado to begin with. Now the quarterback is blaming their offensive line in public. Dion, how about this just crap that Dion has done? How about this? When Shedeur Sanders scores a touchdown in a game, the band is not allowed to play the fight song. Because they need to play Shedeur Sanders' mixtape song.
What?
His big hit song, they're trying to make it. They play that after he scores a touchdown. I think it's like a rushing touchdown. I saw the story the other day. It sounds fake, and maybe I got duped. Maybe I got duped like Ron on a fake trade news on Twitter. But it was a pretty reputable source.
Well, you better get that right. You better get that right. But the moral of that story is, God bless Dion and Lane Kiffin and Dabo Swinney. We need more of that. We need more of it. I don't even know how we stumbled into this topic. I hate Jim Boeheim. Not hate. I just, you know, a turnoff. But he was great for the game of basketball. You go into a Jim Boeheim news conference, you're going to get something.
All right, so here's the clarification. The report was out there for a while, but as of 2 days ago, Deion Sanders denies asking Colorado band not to play in favor of Son Shadur's music.
Well, thank God for that. Jim Calhoun, same thing. A character that you didn't like. If you weren't a UConn fan, you couldn't help but really not like him. But man, it was interesting and fun. Never dull to go in and talk to Jim Calhoun after a game or before a game. I think we're missing those characters. Brian Billick was one for the Ravens. Man, I loved going and covering training camp with him in Westminster College. Perhaps it's Westminster University by now. City limits.
No,
I don't
still
know.
College.
Great stuff, man. He was irritable. If you felt like if you touched his arm, your finger would sizzle. You know, he was just boiling over with intensity and sarcasm and everything else. Where are all these people? Is it a product of the world we live in?
I think partly.
Where are all these hateable, and I say that in the sporting sense, characters?
There's more in college than there are in pro sports now.
Maybe. But we just went through the NFL. You join the conversation. Is there anybody left in the NFL coaching-wise that you really, really... I'm not talking, oh, yeah, I don't really like that guy. I'm talking his name appears or his face appears on the TV and you want to throw something at it. And you live to beat him. That was Belichick, right? Everybody did.
One texter points to Mike McDaniel in Miami.
I like him. But I will agree that he can be a polarizing figure.
Did you see the picture of him when in his introductory press conference, then him last week with the Miami Sun, how it's gotten to him? His hairstyle is completely different. He looks like he's really soaked in South Beach.
You got to show me that.
But we got to see this picture of Ron when the last day that he was here, and Ron now, the comparison
post that.
Of it.
Yeah.
If I only had it, Ron's only gone off the face of the earth.
Picture of him I'll send you. I think part of the equation is winning. To become very unlikable, you have to win